Okay.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
By the way, abutters were notified of this application. I received one response. It actually came in to talk to me about the application. They weren't concerned about it. They were just curious about what it was. Because when I send out abutter notices, I don't send them copies of the application, just a description of the application. So,
were they concerned about continuing to have free blueberries or something?
No. They, in fact, they were owners of a blueberry field. I think they're even next door to
the next lot, larger field.
Yeah. They just asked a few questions and left satisfied. I also shared the application with department heads, as I routinely do, required to do, and received no comments or concerns about this application from any department director.
Say GPMCT.
Yeah, they usually just abbreviate.
Yeah. Is that official though?
I've written it enough times now, I do it. Well, we can put down number one that you've done an introductory
presentation. Yeah. Yes, you have. Yeah. So I checked.
Right. Not as thorough as I usually do, but we'll have to do.
We'll note that too.
But you've got us to where we need it. And the applicant did a thing. General questions.
Any public comments?
Yes.
General bias thing.
Chris
opted out.
Call me general bias.
Yeah, general bias.
Opted out.
We need a vote on that. Would that be appropriate?
Are you participating? If you recuse yourself.
I recuse myself from voting.
Should it be the whole discussion?
I would think so,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Then that's great. They should there be a board discussion to vote on that, though, for the record? That's all I'm asking.
Well, probably, yes. If you're all in agreement that Mr. Johnson should be recused from this review, then you should probably document that in the record.
I'd make that motion.
All in favor?
Yes,
Chris. Being recused.
Who's the second on that?
I guess I'll second it, but you're not getting any financial.
That's not a financial.
He's on the board. So.
It's a bias.
Oh, bias. Okay. Okay.
What was the vote?
Only from the standpoint if we feel that he's biased.
I am.
Can we disagree?
You've got enough for quorum, so you should be all set.
Yeah. One, two, three, four. Cool.
All in favor.
Good. So what's typically done when a member is recused from the review is, and I'm not saying you have to do this, but typically they step down and sit in the audience and you and participate as the public.
What if I just want to go home?
We still have discussions.
We still have things to do.
Okay.
Nice try.
You only get $15.
I have to sit with Jennifer.
Yes.
Well, you can make a comment when the time comes.
Yeah.
Do you want your water before you...
What's...
Now we have to get a unanimous consensus for this application to be approved, because we have just four voting members now.
So the only thing we are considering is moving some gravel to make some parking spaces and for them to continue
doing what they're doing.
On the trail.
Working on the trails.
We have to approve what they already did and then identify how much parking they need. They've already cut the trail, so we have to give them approval to do that. Right? Correct? Basically? We have to bless what they've already done.
Yeah.
And then,
why don't you go through your checklist here to see what discussion might arise?
I did.
You said nobody called me. Didn't.
No comment.
Oh.
I mentioned public.
Yeah, you've got new public. You got new public now.
Don't get him started.
Okay, jump right in.
The board is going to conduct an application review right now. Environmental standards, soils are suitable. Stormwater runoff is, I'm sure they're managing it.
On number three, I have a question where she said that there would be some groundwork because the trail has got a lot of side hill. I wonder, is that going to run off onto an adjacent property? Or, I mean, we can ask that when we get
okay,
there.
Okay, we'll ask.
Would you like to address that now?
I'd be okay with that.
Yeah.
No, we don't have to come back to it.
You mentioned some groundwork to take away the side hill on the trail. How is that going to be protected from runoff?
So we're talking about a 5-foot wide footpath. And so generally when I do side hills, if you imagine of the land slope like this, we cut it down like this and level it off. Where this is going to be done is right in the middle of the property, so we're a long way from the property boundary and we're a long way from Colby Brook. Okay. And we wouldn't do that right over a drainage. So there are a couple of, small gullies. We wouldn't do that over a gully. And so generally what happens, if there is water, it actually works out better because you've created a relatively level surface. And then usually what I do when I do that is I'll take anywhere, periodically I'll just dig a little trench and put rocks in. So some water needs to get off the trail, can get off that way.
So building the trails, you don't put up any silt fence or...
We have not. We haven't even disturbed the soil yet at all. And but generally what, you might end up with a 10, 20, 30-foot stretch where it's awkward for people to walk on a side hill, so level it out and make a little bench out of it. And we do it, it's 5-foot wide. And
You removing the duff layer?
And it depends on where you're needing to do the side hilling. Sometimes you have to.
So you're exposing loose soil then?
And then I generally, there's always rocks, right? So on the lower side, take rocks and support it if it needs it. And then if I think water might run on that surface, I just dig these little trenches and fill them with rocks. And that allows the water to go through without carrying soil with it. But I've not had problems with these.
So you're doing stormwater management, of course, sort of on the fly, as whatever, wherever is needed.
Yeah, I mean, there's only a couple, three places I pointed out to Joe where I thought, if you really want to make it the kind of trail that people can cross-country ski on, I wouldn't be surprised if people didn't do that in there.
5-foot wide, you said?
I usually go 5-foot wide. I tell people to go from the tip of your finger to your elbow on the side. It's a pretty good measure, and that's about 5 feet. And that's wide enough for cross-country skiers, snowshoer, any of the winter sports.
What's the topography like?
We tried to keep it off the steepest parts. Well, we deliberately kept it off the steepest parts. So the parts of this property that are quite steep, like where the blueberry field is and elsewhere in the property, but the lower part of the loop is virtually flat, and the loop coming back, we avoided the steepest places, and we kind of maneuvered around to keep it, a 20% slope maybe. We kept it pretty... we kept away from the steepest places. Joe wanted to put it on the real steep places, and I said, so we are capable of building that and maintaining it the way it should be. So we know our limits.
Thank you.
All right. Okay.
That's been addressed with best management practices.
Yeah. Well, if they do it with stone and...
Mm-hmm. don't see any others that are applicable.
So I just have a question about number six. Do you know if there's any identified? There's no deer yards identified around here.
I don't believe so. There's only a couple of places in Bucksport, right, that are actually identified. Is
that you?
Yeah, unfortunately. I'm just buzzing.
Oh. Okay.
All right. Not applicable.
So nothing.
No shoreline zoning.
How far do they have to be from Colby Brook?
Colby Brook is a stream protection district, which is just 75 feet wide.
No big deal.
And boy, there's very little that's even close to Colby Brook.
Are you on to special area standards now?
I don't think so.
Yep. Okay.
If you like, I can give you on this checklist if you want to follow along.
Sure.
We're on page 3.
Thank you.
She mentioned a foundation out there.
Yeah, there's an old cellar hole. Up at the top of the hill, right by the road.
On the particular trail property.
It's on our property, but it's not part of our trail system, no.
So this wouldn't...
It's on this parcel.
It's on this parcel.
It's not historical.
Not that I know of. I mean, it's a...
No structure, just an old rock foundation?
No rock foundation.
All right.
Present any hazard?
It is so overgrown and thick to get into it. You have to be very determined.
Okay, you ain't going to fall into it.
No, okay. Nobody's going to fall into it. It really won't.
No. Okay. I don't know, the vistas are, I'm sure, being highlighted, so. There's probably... There is no public access to water bodies here. No maritime use.
No flood hazard.
Huh?
No flood hazard.
No?
No areas in the comprehensive plan yet.
No.
Probably nothing.
Okay. Now we'll move on to... I don't see anything in special area. Local area standards.
No development.
No. No problem with lighting.
No.
I think there's power lines up through there.
The electromagnetic fields up there.
I'm wondering what some of these
artificial lighting
lines are. Whether they're
noise, no.
Power line easements or
odors. The odors are from the.
Yeah.
Noise,
no.
Nuisance odors,
no.
Stuff so again, nothing. Nothing.
Not much to look at on this application.
No, it's pretty cut and dry so far.
No.
Okay.
Nothing there,
Page
public safety
five.
Wise. I imagine public safety standards
no.
are not
nothing applicable there.
Public safety, you might want to just have a brief discussion about accessibility if somebody had to call 911 right. from the trail. How is an ambulance going to get to that site? They'll get there.
From the Dedham side, though.
One way or another, they'll get there, but it might take them a bit longer than usual.
So they'd have to come from the Dedham side or from
no,
the...
No, always
no,
life
they wouldn't be able to do it from the Dedham side.
There's always yeah. life
because
flight.
Because of the Colby Brook Bridge problem.
Okay, so you have to come from
that's
the
really the only way to drive
side.
Into
yeah, it's the only way you can really drive in.
Okay.
And an ambulance might be able to make... I've driven up there in a two-wheel drive truck.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've been up there many times.
I don't know how wide, how wide is the road kept cleared? 12 feet? 16
yeah.
feet?
Yeah, it's wide enough. Mm-hmm.
I've passed people going the other way.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not you want to do all the speed, but if, like you said, I mean, I think somebody, they could get up there. They might not be able to drive right to the
park. Not in the winter, though. Not with their ambulance, anyway. They'd have to use another way to get to the site.
Well, yeah. Entire time, but. Like any other use in Maine, though. I mean, you see wardens going into the woods and snowmobiles that will haul people out on stretchers. So.
Yeah, it's doable. Yeah.
You've got Life Flight helicopters in your body.
And there is cell phone reception there.
The other thing you might want to talk about is wastewater disposal. There's none proposed. And I think probably because of the expected low usage that you anticipate having there, very few people coming at one time. They're not proposing to have any outhouse or any facilities like that.
Mother Nature is there.
Is there a limit
that right.
would suggest that?
No, I can't say there's a threshold there.
I can't think of any place in Great Pond Mountain that has a toilet.
We do. We've got one outhouse in the center of the property.
Okay, I've never seen it.
It's part of the tool shed. Okay. And then each time we hold a public event, by the way, when we do our trail runs, snowshoe races, tree cutting, we always rent in a porta potty.
Oh.
So if we ever decided to do a big blueberry jam up there or something, right, we would rent a porta potty.
Oh, okay.
Is that something you're contemplating doing, having events there?
I was not. I mean, right now, I would just like to get some
trails. Just brainstorming.
Some signage, improve the parking a little bit.
Will there be signage to direct people there?
We just need a sign right on the property. That says Great. We already put up a property boundary sign, but we wanted to put up a sign that says Great Pond Mountain Conservation Trust, Kimball property, welcome to the property. Please respect. Usually we put something about respect for the adjacent landowners, yada yada. Yes, hunting, fishing is allowed. If it's hunting season, please look for those orange. So generally we've got some information like that.
So just a note for the record, if you're not going to require an outhouse of any type, then the people who do go to the site, when nature calls, they're going to use the woods.
Right. We're all animals.
How many feet from a stream are you usually supposed to do it? It's like, 30 feet or something?
Actually, the site... an outhouse or open
pit.
Wet willy. You need to be 100 feet from a stream.
Mm-hmm. I meant a person.
Oh, a person? Yeah, a person, I think, yeah.
I think it's 30 feet or something like that.
Yeah.
You can put a gear in the stream.
Out to deer and the bear know that. They're going to get some air.
They need another 2 minutes.
We don't need a site here, right?
No specific use.
It would be fun, I guess. Where are we now?
Specific use standards, page 6. Now, this is where you're going to talk about parking and what the ordinance says for an outdoor recreational facility is. Okay, for seasonal uses, it is one space for each employee. That's not going to apply. One space per camping site for campgrounds. That's not going to apply. This one will. Spaces equal in number to 1/3 of the maximum user or patron design capacity. So good luck with that. So I guess probably to have some idea of what that means, you could ask how many people are anticipated to use this. This trail system.
Geez, probably,
get in one time, probably two people,
there.
Right?
Yeah.
Could be two people, could be five, could be 50, you know.
You provide, well, it should depend on the parking spaces. I mean, the parking spaces proposed are, you mentioned you had two spaces on the property.
Probably we can make that three nice ones.
Three, and then possibly a couple more at the sled site?
Yeah, for the people that don't want to drive in.
Yeah. So that's five. If you have four people per vehicle, that's 20 people. So divide that by three. You're talking roughly seven parking spaces.
I was going to say six to eight would be more than enough.
Do you have any usage counts on any of your other trails that are open?
It's really hard to get that information. Great Palm Mountain itself is the highest use by a factor of probably six or seven over any of our other trails.
And how many parking spaces do you have there?
Not enough. I think it really only amounts to six spaces.
So about at each end, don't you? Each point of entry you have?
We do. Spaces. The one that everybody uses, the main one right there on the Don Fish Road, we have about six spaces there. We have another five spaces just down the road where the Dead River Road goes in. But there are times when those spaces just fill up and overflow. So we're kind of under, but that is by far our most popular area.
And more easily accessible, obviously, than the Upper Long Pond site.
Right. Yeah. The only time I see the Upper Long Pond Road site, this property, getting more than a couple people at a time would be when the blueberries are ripe. And we're going to open it up to make it your own. It's a long, hard slog to go to get your own there. They need two places to do it. But if people decide to, I would imagine that's where we'd probably see more people than any in those couple weeks.
This generally not a crowd, you know. Half a dozen people might hike at once.
That would be a crowd.
Yeah.
Okay. That would be a crowd.
The popularity of the trails, is it growing and expanding?
It is. So our trails are getting more popular as, you know, there's social media out there, so all of a sudden people from other places know and find out about your trail systems, and you don't know when they found out. It's out there on some social media site somewhere. And so we're seeing increased use of all of our trails. And so as the word gets out about this property, I think we'll see, usually you see a bigger crowd, you know, more people at the beginning, they all want to come check it out. And then people realize, oh, it's a bad road, oh, I have to park here and walk in because I only brought my Prius, you know. And so then the numbers will drop.
The application, though, does describe a couple of parking spots on site and then two to three cars at the sledge storage site, so we're talking five or six. Proposed.
Mm-hmm.
So the question is that sufficient to the board, six spaces total? Assuming that the town agrees to allow the sledge site to be used for parking as well.
So it would allow 18 people? And that one-third of the occupants for space?
One-third of the maximum user patron design capacity.
So if you got six spaces, that would allow 18 people there at any one time.
Well, four per car is be 24. But
no, but I'm saying how many people are allowed there with that number of spaces would be
ordinance,
18.
Yes.
If you're going to provide spaces for one-third of number of people there.
Oh, well, okay.
I guess the question is, does the applicant want to accommodate a party of X number of people at any given time, and say, if that's the case, well, how many? And it might be 20 people, probably not that many, but mm-hmm. but I mean, if you had four vehicles, four people in each vehicle, that's 16 people that could show up at the same time. Mm-hmm. So, and the trail system, I believe, how long is that loop trail, by the way?
It's just under a mile.
It can accommodate that many people, especially if they're hiking in a group.
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to be difficult, I think, to apply that one-third factor in this, because you really don't know how many people this facilities can accommodate at any one time, maximum.
In general, you can walk a mile trail in half an hour, all right? So
you're going to have to make a judgment call on that.
Yeah, I would move that if they can make three, then that would be sufficient. Mm-hmm. And if they can get approval from the town council on additional spaces, that's just a bonus.
Three on site, you're saying?
Yes.
Yeah.
And those parking spaces would need to be graveled. Each space 10 by 20 minimum. Yep. Is that satisfactory? Is that doable?
Yeah.
Is three going to be enough?
Well, it makes for at least a 30 by 40 foot pad. Could turn in.
Well, the parking can be arranged pull in and back out. And,
yeah.
You know, you don't have to have a parking lot necessarily for three spaces on that road anyway.
What's the analogy, Jen?
Right now is a little dirt road into the blueberry field. We've actually parked four vehicles in there.
You're kind of parking in the field, right?
Well, we're parking along the little road that goes by where the cell hole is toward the field. We're actually not in the field.
You're parking one behind the other?
Yeah, there's actually room to put two side-by-side, right, the way it is. So you really put two side-by-side and another two. But you don't want to do that for public parking, so you want to go block each other.
Right, yeah.
So the idea would be to make it three side-by-side so nobody blocks anybody else in.
Yeah.
But is the soil there sufficient? I guess I'm wondering, quite often forested land, you wouldn't need to put any gravel or anything on it because it's sufficient the way it is.
It is on the level. It's not in the blueberry field, so it's not going to, you know, and there's a cellar hole and some trees between where the little road access road is and down the hill. So, yeah, it's level soil, basically, on a little old road is what it is.
Has the little road been graveled?
I think
or is it just a forest road?
I mean, Allen's has been using it for years, and, you know.
I mean, I'm just thinking out there in Mother Nature, you know, I guess I would. My preference would be not to haul gravel in there because it's not natural to the site.
Ah.
That's just my thought. I mean, if you're out there for the natural experience and what.
Well, maybe there's a 5 foot wide trail.
Huh?
A 5 foot wide trail is not natural to the site either. But, you know, this is a land use. It's a land use, so you have to really think about improvements that are needed to accommodate the public.
Are they public? I guess maybe. I don't know. Well,
of course, this is.
They don't charge fee.
No fee charge.
So it's public.
The public will be welcome to use these trails.
Absolutely.
Without limitation.
Without limitation, and welcome to hunting fish. Not that they can fish well. Well, they could in the
beavers,
I guess.
It's not handicapped accessible.
Huh? And we expect hunters.
Yeah,
people.
There's no ADA.
Well, Chairman, I need to.
Okay.
The comment on the handicap is one of our goals of the Great Pond is to make our properties disabled accessible the best we can. And we have an active program now with that, with access into the office, as well as increasing the access to the wildlands, as well as to the Great Pond section as best we can to provide those services to folks who have those issues. So we're in the beginning stages of that. There's a few of us working on it. But I'm not sure we to address your comment, I'm not sure we would be able to provide a service at this time with that. But certainly it's something that we're working on.
Okay. Well, great for you guys. Thanks.
So the parking at the sledge site, I believe, will require some filling, won't it?
Yeah, I haven't looked at it.
You haven't looked at it?
I have not looked at it.
Because it's just as I understand it, it's just past the entrance to the Sledge property.
There's a place to pull over there.
Yeah, there's an old foundation there, I think.
Yeah.
I think it drops off the road there. You might need to bring
some
fill.
We might need to improve that ourselves. Yeah. So we will go through that with the town council. So we just brought that up because we figured that, especially in the winter, you know, people are going to want to be getting in there skiing, snowshoeing and stuff, and they're going to look to park somewhere.
Speaking of the town council, there's nothing on the agenda for the meeting on Thursday about this topic. Were you expecting it to be?
No, I'm actually coming Thursday to talk about the rural pool improvement on the Miles Lane. I'll be there.
Yeah.
The answer is we'd like to have it on.
I talked to the town manager about that. Her understanding was that there wasn't a plan to address the parking question on Thursday.
Okay.
But, I mean, if you bring it up, they might talk about it. But
okay. But
it's not on the agenda, though.
So I'll start squeezing in after the little four days.
The next section, dimensions, there's no applicable setbacks required for recreational trails. Parking... parking spaces, I don't believe there's a setback requirement for parking spaces. It's a parking lot, maybe, but not a parking space. This is not going to be a parking lot.
Yeah.
So that's...
This could actually just be a turnout on the existing road back through Tasman and Merle.
Right, exactly. That's the plan, isn't it? You just have a place to pull off the road. You drive in and back out.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay.
So now what the board is doing, they go back and do their findings, starting on page 2. You see a box at the bottom there. They do their findings for each category of standards.
Move that the proposed land use will have no impact on the environment is contrary to the purposes of this ordinance.
All in favor?
Impact, it is.
You didn't find any applicable special area objectives, so a vote's not required on that section.
Right.
The same on the local areas. No applicable standards.
Nope.
Public safety, we talked about wastewater disposal.
Yeah.
I brought that topic up. I'm assuming you believe it's an applicable standard or not.
Yeah, we mentioned access to 911 as well. I move that the proposed land use will have no impact on public safety that is contrary to the purposes of this ordinance.
Second.
All in favor?
And then the specific use standards with parking is an applicable requirement.
Based on our discussion, it appears that that's going to be adequately addressed, so I would propose that the land use has met all applicable specifics uses in this ordinance.
Could I just maybe add to that motion, since you're not going to take a final vote, if you could add to that motion, George, that conditional approval for three more spaces at the Sledge site?
Yes.
So what if the town council says no? I would say that if they had three on their own site,
The place isn't manned anyways.
And, well, true, but...
they can approve.
Who knows? I mean, who knows why they... But, and then if they do get permission from the town council for two or three additional sites, then that's just...
gravy?
Gravy.
What you're saying is then you're only requiring three parking spaces for this land use. Is that right?
I'm okay with that.
We did look at it that way. Because we figured six would be just about the maximum. And two and three cars would be... Two people in three cars is...
I mean, even if the town council said no and people wanted to get in there in the wintertime, the plow only goes so far. If someone just pulled in and stopped right at the edge of the where they stopped plowing snow and walked in, no one's ever going to stop them from parking there.
True. Yeah.
But so, parking on the road?
Right where the plow stops. Where I think it stops shortly after the...
But the people that live up there on that road past the sled site, and also you have the composting facility as well. So that's going to be kept clear past the sled site, privately maintained past the sled site. Well, at least up to that, the residence is up on that road.
There's some year-round residences beyond it?
Yeah, there's a house up there that's, I believe, is still occupied.
I think so.
Last I heard, it was still occupied. And they maintained that part of the road to get to the
top.
So.
And Barry's also.
Yes.
Well, I just don't know why we have to make a contingent on possible spots at the sludge site.
Well, instead of doing that, why don't you, if you're only going to require three sites, and the applicant says, well, we may also have three more, grant approval for those three additional sites.
Yes, right. So you can shift
them. Whether or not they're approved in the end is really not relevant to this review, because you only are requiring three sites on the property.
Yeah, and if they can get as many as possible, then great.
You're just recognizing in your motion that you also would approve the three additional sites at the sled site if the council approved it.
Yes. That would be
correct.
is that clear as mud?
Clear as sludge.
I'll try to word that properly in the record.
I'm just kind of curious how we can approve something off their site on somebody else's site.
With the owner of that property's approval, you can do that.
Okay.
And that's where the council comes in.
And what we're saying is we will accept those parking spaces as the ones required by the ordinance for that site use. Even though...
Well, there'd be additional ones.
In the wintertime, those will be the only ones.
Yeah.
At certain times of the year, yes.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Mud season and all that, yeah.
So in either case, if they do get three from the town, they're covered in both, all the seasons.
Yeah. Yeah.
Who knows, maybe the couple that lives up there will let people park on their property.
I don't know.
You don't think so? For a fee, maybe.
Yeah, put a little coffee can up there.
A lot of dogs.
So we all square on that motion? Jeff's going to make a word.
I'll second it. All in favor?
Good.
No dimension standards, so there's no action there.
So the board made a positive finding on all the applicable standards, so therefore your application has been approved.
Well, thank you, everybody. I'm so sorry you had to take all the time to do this. But we were told we needed to come and get a site permit, so...
The permit will be sent out in the mail.
Excellent. Well, thank you.
Thank you for coming in.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay.
Well, Chris, back to work.
Slouching off.
Discussion.
election of officers.
This one here.
Huh?
This one right here.
Don't we do that in December?
No. January. See, we already got it. We already finished it. It's not on the agenda.
Huh?
Nothing on the agenda.
Okay. I'll see you first.
Well, no, I don't want to. Except Ed's trying to bring up some another agenda item. You won't allow it.
It's December. Usually we have the election of officers for the...
You're correct. I forgot to put that on the agenda. Would I wait until next month? Just so it's on the agenda?
Sounds good.
Nobody's too anxious.
I have a discussion item to bring up.
The
ordinance committee was visited by a couple who live on Outer Bucks Mills Road, who have a neighbor that has set up a camper and is powering with a generator. And it's extremely disturbing to the people who live out there, and they've come to the ordinance committee and asked them to do something about it.
The guy living in the van?
He's not living in the van. He's staying there occasionally. It's a getaway for him on weekends, primarily. So it's not consistent occupancy. So the generator's not running all the time. But it's running just enough to be a nuisance to the neighbors.
Does he own the property?
A relative does. He has permission to be there. So it started out with a discussion about how to regulate generator noise, and it evolved into a discussion about requiring permits for RV campsites, specifically in subdivisions. And both the town manager and I have looked into this to see if such an ordinance is legally possible, and we're told it's not. If you're going to require permitting for RVs, it needs to be town-wide, not just in subdivision laws. We do have permit requirements in shoreline zones, but that's because DEP requires. That used to be permitted in shoreline zones only.
So probably a lot more boats in the summertime, too, doesn't it?
I don't know. You know, it's
that's a subdivision right there?
Yeah, so that's the point they're making. They believe that because it's a subdivision, it should be protected. You should buy a subdivision lot anticipating that your neighbor is going to build a house as you are doing on your lot, not park a camper and run a generator.
Right.
Would that be covered with a covenant, though, most of the time?
Well, I believe it is. I believe there is a deed covenant that says the lots can only be used for dwellings. But they want the town to enforce, not the covenants necessarily, but they want the town to adopt an ordinance that will, in effect, stop the neighbor from running a generator.
Be a noise ordinance.
And they're suggesting that we require permits for RV sites, also require septic system and a well for an RV site.
It's not an RV site.
You can have all those requirements, but whether or not you can make it applicable to the existing RV site is another question.
Yeah.
You can make, I learned this actually,
This is in a subdivision. Is there power already near the site?
Yeah there is. The power goes by the property.
Put temporary?
Well, that involves cost. You may have to
A generator.
You may have to put a pole in too to bring power, and obviously they don't want to do that. That's why they're using a generator. But to make an ordinance retroactive to existing land uses is doable, but you have to have a good reason, a very good reason for doing that. Otherwise, you could be subjecting the town to legal challenges, takings. It could be a takings. You're forcing these people to do something that you have the right to do without paying damages.
How big are the lots?
Oh, they're roughly 2 acre lots, or bigger. I think it's bigger than 2 acres. This is the old Bucks Mills acreage subdivision. it was a subdivision that was actually contested by the town, and originally was brought up because the road at that time was dirt.
Way out. We used to
way
out. We called it the Peat Bog Road for so many years.
Last when I left the board, they were trying to get into McGann Bog at the time for the development of 40 acres of lot. But a lot. I don't think it. I think they dropped the thing.
No, that happened.
Did that happen?
Yeah. But that wasn't a subdivision.
Well, they were going to do it. They were trying their best to get one.
Yeah. So anyway, the ordinance committee is meeting Thursday night at 5:30 to take up this matter again, and we're going to be telling them that because they asked us to come back to this meeting with some draft language to deal with this issue. I tried to come up with some language. We talked to MMA legal counsel, and they're telling us don't go there. You know, it's not just not a good idea to go there. So we're not.
How does that differ from a barking dog ordinance?
Well, there are. It's a nuisance. It's barking dogs can be a nuisance, and I believe that it can be enforced. I'm not sure what language you have in the ordinance. I think there's a statute that applies to that as well.
Okay. Well, I'm just wondering if it could be a noise nuisance ordinance rather than.
We looked at that. We looked at just adopting a straight across the board noise ordinance, but again, you have to apply a noise ordinance one of two ways. Either you do it by decibel ratings, which requires a professional with certified equipment to measure the sound levels so they can testify in court as what they are, or you do what the law currently says, and it's a disorderly conduct issue. The statute actually identifies now certain types of noise as being viewed as disorderly conduct, but the noise has to be identified as being loud and unreasonable. That's a very subjective call. You have a police officer out there who may think, well, gee, how can anybody tolerate this noise? It's so loud. That's unreasonable. You got to take that to court and defend that. And it's very difficult to do that. So
I'm not sure there's any generator out there if it has a muffler on it that would exceed the limits. And
the question is that unreasonable to use a generator to provide power to an RV? Well, no, it's not unreasonable. People do it all the time. So that's why we're suggesting that we don't deal with the noise issue, and we don't deal with permitting of RVs because it's just not needed. It's not a need to permit RV camping sites across the town. This is one issue that's come up.
Pretty
one
remote, issue. Isn't it? That's pretty remote out there, isn't it?
Well, you have the Bucks Mills Acres subdivision, and you got the Kings Mountain subdivision right across the street that's fairly well developed. There's still some vacant lots there, but there's some nice homes out there.
Yeah. Wasn't he going to be leaving soon? Wasn't that what I heard?
I believe the cold weather was going to stop the activity there. So I haven't had a chance to drive by there.
Well, then the windows will be closed.
He's there more often than not. I mean, you said weekends. I go by there. I live right only half a mile from there.
Yeah.
He's been there. I don't know when he showed up, but the van, that thing, showed up, and there's a light on all the time. But there's a no trespassing sign that just showed up about a week or two ago. So.
Well, that's been there for a while.
It's relatively new, though.
Well, maybe it's a new sign, but I've seen one for quite a while.
Yeah.
So any approved subdivision in the town of Bucksport that has an open space still available, an RV could go do that.
Right? Without a permit, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
I mean, he's out in the woods, though. I mean,
I know. Yeah. But that could happen anyways. You know.
Well, I'm in a subdivision. I want to put a generator in my house. But my neighbor's got one. We're pretty tight.
We're talking about the usage. We're not talking
about
the place.
When I have to use mine, I'd use it.
But he's using it all the time.
When there's no when electricity is still running.
That's the issue. Yeah. When he's using it and how long.
There's no electricity at his house, so.
You get true. Well, that's his problem, not ours.
But in my research on that, I learned a new term. Maybe you all know the term. I didn't know this term. It's called boondocking. You ever heard of that?
No.
I've heard it.
Boondocking is living in an RV off the grid. You know, you just go wherever you want to go. Yeah. Whether it's hookups or not, you're boondocking.
There's a guy in the Castine Road that did that when I was in college. Just found a spot, pulled it right into off the road, and he just lived in it. He was there for a couple of years.
So I just thought I'd make you aware of this going on. I don't think there's going to be an ordinance out of all this. If we were seeing a trend, at least this seems happening, maybe we'd take a serious look at it. But there's no trend. There's one person who's doing something that's disturbing one other person.
But the relative owns the property.
Yeah, they have permission to be there, obviously.
Oh, okay.
So this is the first time a noise complaint has come up from a neighbor. Another example, it took place about 10 years ago. There was a fellow up on Route 15 who worked for an oil company, and he drove the delivery truck home. And he started up early in the morning, a diesel engine, loud diesel engine, and let it run for an hour or so before he left for work. And the neighbor across the street objected to that noise. Came
right
to town.
On the road, too. He was right on the
road. Yeah, right on the road, yeah.
See, he was right there.
Came to the town, asked the town to do something about it. The ordinance committee met, but they refused to do anything. I don't think that's going on anymore, though.
No, he was there, but. Yeah. And she's left, too.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
The street
there. Yeah. So it does come up from time to time, but.
I hear it from Sheldon Eastman's there sometime. I'm that close.
Yeah. But I don't anticipate there'll be a noise ordinance out of there.
You shouldn't have to regulate common courtesy.
Well, that's the thing, right?
That's why lawyers exist.
Yeah. Yeah. Tell them that. You know, be nice. Build a insulated box around the down thing.
Why spend money? I know.
Mm-hmm. Even a piece of plywood you put up between the generator and an extra property
like
will deflect
exactly.
The sound waves.
Oh, yeah.
Somewhat.
Yeah.
You know, reduce it. But I'm not sure if he's done anything. He came in to see me. I sent a letter to the property owner to let them know about the concerns of the neighbors and asked to speak with them. He came in to see me. He was a little perturbed that his neighbors are complaining about his generator. But
I dealt with barking dogs 24/7. Mm-hmm. Had to deal with that. Went to court twice. One along with the other neighbors, and nothing ever changed.
Did you get rid of your dog?
No, the guy eventually got rid of the dog. I missed the joke, I'm sorry. So it's never fun.
So the other thing I just want to mention to you briefly is Chapter 6, the business licensing ordinance, is being overhauled. It's going to be introduced to the town council on Thursday. And I think have I told you about this before?
I think so.
It's
part of the vendors.
Yeah, this is just completely overhauled. But one change that the ordinance committee wanted to make in the fee schedule. The fees are relatively inexpensive to begin with, but the proposed ordinance said that you pay one fee if you're a new license, and then when you come back the next year for relicensing, you pay half that fee. The ordinance committee wanted to eliminate the renewal fee altogether for all the licenses.
How much money does that take away?
Well, it takes away everything.
Yeah.
All the revenue is gone, essentially, except for a new license that comes in every now and then. All the revenue we're picking up now for licensing will be gone.
Right.
But the thing that troubled me about that is how can you justify charging one business a license fee and another business no fee at all for their license?
We had that discussion.
So I consulted the MMA Legal about that as well, and they came back and says, no, you can't do that. It's unconstitutional. It's not fair and equal treatment under the law. So we're going to be sharing that with the ordinance committee Thursday night, and hopefully if they agree, we'll still have that license requirement in there for renewal fees. Other than that, they were surprisingly receptive to the changes, some pretty significant changes to the licensing requirements. The vendor licensing is totally different now, and there are many businesses that are subject to licensing now that no longer will have to get licenses. There's one type of business that will have to get a license that didn't before, that's innkeepers. So the three motels in town will now have to be licensed on an annual basis.
We had that discussion before, and I brought up that question of brothels. The answer was because people coming in to sit down at a restaurant,
Yeah, well, we're not in Nevada.
But if they're not going to sit down, they don't have to pay. Is that correct? Is that still the proposal?
That is, and the reason for that, Chris, is because my initial proposal was that we don't require licensing for food vendors across the board. Because we don't have a food code. We don't enforce a food code in Bucksport. That's enforced by the state.
Right.
But the ordinance committee didn't want to go that far. So instead, I said, well, let's just license businesses that allow people to assemble on their property and deal with the life safety code, which we do enforce. So that's why food vendors that have no on-site seating will not need to be licensed, and that's essentially the Hannafords, Irvings, Tozier's, places like that that don't have seating for the people to eat food on the premises versus restaurants.
Is it a flat fee, Jim? Or is it based upon square footage or number of tables or seats? How's that work? Because I'm just picturing George coming in and saying, why am I getting hit for this and these folks aren't? That's all I was just trying to figure out how we would explain that.
Well, you'll find that every other business in town that serves food for on-premise consumption is still going to be licensed, just like George's. Okay. All the restaurants, their report will still, because they have on-site seating as well.
And
the takeout restaurants on Route 46 both have on-site seating, so they still need a license.
But the Hannaford doesn't have life safety codes that we would enforce, right?
Well, sure. Yeah, we do, yeah.
Well, I mean, you're basing it all on life safety codes.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that they're sitting down and it's a life safety code issue as opposed to they're not sitting down, and the life safety code is irrelevant because they're not sitting. I'm just trying to understand. I'm not arguing.
Well, I understand, yes. That's a good point to make. And if you think about this, though, there's many other types of businesses. And just look at the ones on Main Street. Retail stores don't require licensing, but they're still subject to life safety code like any other business is. So that was my rationale, is if a business that sells gifts doesn't need to be licensed, why does a business selling food need to be licensed?
That's all. Well, because we're really splitting, I hate using the word hair, I say.
Yes.
But, because Hannaford sells a lot of food off that deli and they have that, off the bar, and, you know, yeah. So people go in there and get food, and I know they're not sitting there. But we're basing the sit downs on a life safety issue. And Hannaford has to face those same life safety issues. The only difference is they're not sitting down. So the idea is because they're sitting down, it could be more of a life safety problem, if there is a problem. Sort of saying sit down versus not sit down, and oh, by the way, it's a life safety.
Well, yeah, the difference is also in how you classify the use. A place where people congregate, including places where they sit down to eat, is a place of assembly versus Hannaford, which is a mercantile occupancy. People come in, they walk around, gather their food, make their purchases, and walk back out again. Versus somebody who sits down, spends some time, maybe doesn't pay close attention to exit requirements and things of that nature. So there's a greater risk of life safety issues occurring in places of assembly versus a business occupancy or mercantile occupancy. But we don't look at theaters. The Alamo is not required to be licensed or inspected by the town. We don't require inspections of schools, places like that, that where people assemble.
I understand what you're doing. I just find it hard to defend it. And I'm not against it. I'm just thinking, how do you, this, again, splitting hairs is going to make it difficult. Yeah.
We should.
Stuff here.
To make the case stronger, we should require licensing of every place of assembly, including the Alamo, including the schools. Well, not necessarily licensing, but annual inspections of these facilities to make certain they are safe for the people who go and congregate there. Churches too, not a good example.
Yeah, we've talked about this before. In Brewer, they show up, code and fire show up 2-3 times a year, probably even quarterly.
Good.
Yeah, and that's the way it should be.
I have to jump through all the hoops and show
after
them
this place in California where all those people burned alive.
Just by doing it quarterly, semi-annually. Everything should have a license. And the only reason they should have a license is to be subject to a fee that would pay for these inspections.
Inspections, yeah. No.
Really? I mean, that's the only money you need to recoup. And, yeah, I mean, it doesn't matter whether it's a church or school, restaurant, retail, doesn't matter.
They can all burn together.
There are a lot of instances where owners of buildings don't maintain stuff. And disasters can really...
Well, it's one of the news. You probably all heard that fire in Oakland.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Well, and the one in downtown Bucksport not too long ago.
Yeah, I mean, it's not... It's where the public can be. And... almost all the building plans I see now that I'm doing estimates on, very first two pages are life safety codes. All of them. Every one of them. Doesn't matter.
Being involved with the senior resource group that I'm involved with and talking with disabled access, it's an amazing process. What you can or can't do as you build new, there's ways around everything. Now, depending on square footage and all that kind of stuff, you can get around. If you get to a certain point, you have to provide certain services, and there's ways of gerrymandering the building layout to avoid having to do some of that stuff. So it's an interesting way that people get around it. But my question is, when Craig goes out and does any, does he do annual inspections, do you know?
The chief,
of what? Of the businesses here on Main Street. Does Chief Bob go out?
Every business?
Yes. That we register or whatever. What's the term on the license? Are all licensed facilities inspected once a year? You know?
They're all subject to inspection. I can't say that they're expected every year.
Do you go out with him at all?
Yeah. We usually go out together.
Okay. You must record that somewhere.
Yeah. Okay.
Apartment buildings is another good example. Some towns do require annual inspections of apartment buildings. Yeah. Westport doesn't.
Holden did
as we fell down.
No, they had to learn the hard way, didn't they?
But I think things are going to eventually change because of the outcome of that court case in Portland, where the landlord he was found not guilty of. Manslaughter, but he was found guilty of a life safety code violation that put him in jail for 90 days and $1,000 fine,
which will then turn into a giant civil suit against a wrongful death suit.
So yeah. I believe me, landlords around the state are looking at that case and saying, could I be next? I'm hoping there'll be a positive outcome from that. Yeah, we'll see landlords becoming more responsible about ensuring that their properties are safe for their tenants.
I think a lot of them, as long as the check keeps coming in, they don't really care.
I hope you're right, but I wouldn't put money on that end of it. Six people died already. We'll see how many more have to go.
Well, it could be insurance companies being the driving force there.
Yeah, that's true, too.
Yeah. That's all I have. Yeah. That's all I have. Sure.
And everything in life.
Did we adjourn?
Motion to adjourn.
Motion to adjourn.
Second. All in favor?
Of course.
Right.